Hello, and welcome to the Tao of Tim, where you will learn everything you'll ever need to know, spiritually and practically. Now please sit back, relax.
Hang on a minute, what do you mean, everything I need to know? You can't make that claim, no one can. That's a bloody lie.
Not at all. Life is simple, the lessons are few, they will all be revealed here.
Bullshit! Who are you to make that claim? The Dalai frickin' Lama? I don't think so. Deepak bloody Chopra? Not bloody likely. You got the philosophical depth of a bloody cookie sheet, so sod off with your claims of mystical enlightenment and just say your piece.
Fine, whatever. Welcome to the Tao of Tim, where stuff will be said, stuff will be heard, and maybe, just maybe, one of us will be entertained.
Aye, now that I can get with. Carry on, then. Have your fun.
Since this is my first podcast, and this happens to be the week where Podthology, the Pod Complex from Dragon Moon Press, is supposed to come out, I thought it'd be a good idea if maybe I read the story that I am going to actually have in the Podthology. This story is called Uncle Julius. We buried my Uncle Julius today. He was 72, and yes, he was dead when we set him in the ground. It's only noon, but I've had a couple of drinks already, and right now, while I'm waiting for them to get the wake buffet set out in the dining room of the farmhouse I grew up in, I'm trying to get his dog tags onto my keychain and trying to decide what a fitting tribute would be for Julius. Maybe I should get out my long-ignored, dust-covered brushes and finally paint the portrait of him that Mum wants, based on a couple of the published photos taken of him when he was the eye of his own personal media hurricane. My favorite is the one from the Topeka Capital Journal where he's facing down Jack Hopper's prize bull and smiling. Also under consideration is finally finishing composing the song about him that I started back in college when he was on some Wichita morning show trying to roll an egg across the host's desk with just the power of his mind. I finally digitalized the old videotape we have of the show, so maybe it is about time I finished the song. Then again, although the painting and the song both need to be done at some point, based on the massive influx of emails that's bombarded me in the last 24 hours since I announced that he'd passed away, I think I'm going to have to at least address his hundreds of thousands of fans he found through my odd little podcast, RS, relatively speaking. I'm kind of loath to use the podcast because I'm pretty sure it was this podcast that killed him. On the other hand, maybe the podosphere is the perfect place to take this, since it made at least some of his dreams come true. Although possessing strange planet-wide popularity now, RS started out a few years ago with really, really limited appeal, since I was just getting my feet wet in the new medium to see if it was a good fit with the material I wanted to get out on the net. I'd always wanted to host my own radio show, so once a week I put together a podcast involving my strange relatives, usually starting each half-hour cast with a short interview with Mom's lawyer cousin Leon. Leon and I chatted mostly about the legal ups and downs of incorporation and contracts within the farming community, and I'll be completely honest and straightforward and tell you that flat out, that no one could ever describe those early podcasts as either riveting or captivating. That all changed, though, the week after I upgraded my portable digital audio gear and started recording and podcasting a couple of the Wichita County Fair performances by my famous singing aunts, the Warbling Wichita Wrens. Infamy is far too easy to achieve in this day and age with YouTube and all the other upload your shame on video websites, but my aunts more than earned theirs. For as long as I can remember, fair time meant that my aunts were often either half in the bag drunk from judging the entries in the homemade cider competition, or high on the medicinal weed Aunt Elise smoked for her glaucoma. Some days it was both. The worse the glaucoma got, the higher they got, and the performances were always gems. In a did-she-just-sing-what-I-think-she-sang kind of way. They don't sing anymore, but the archives of those early podcasts are still as popular as ever, of course. The Warbling Wichita Wrens were definitely a hit, but my subscriber list didn't grow into triple digits until Uncle Julius, the family's token Vietnam vet, caught wind of the attention his sisters-in-law were getting and suggested that I interview him about some of his conspiracy theories. From Marilyn Monroe's murder by Abbott and Costello to Elvis's reincarnation as a humming llama in Decatur, Illinois, He was privy to all of them and more than happy to disseminate them to the world at large. Then one day he shocked the shit out of me with his completely unexpected on-air description of the time he spent with a French-Canadian psychic while they were POWs in NAM. How could I do anything but let the tape roll and then dedicate the entire podcast to the stunning tale? In a matter of hours, my subscribership set sail into the heat of high five digits, with fans writing in from McMurdo Station in Antarctica to NASA to Beijing. Julius was an almost instant hit, and the warbling Wichita Wrens were forgotten, which is probably a good thing because one died in touring rehab. As much fun as Julius and I were having, though, the ride wasn't expected to last because, like everything else he ever got involved in, I assumed my uncle would quickly get bored and find something shiny to draw his attention away. And did my prediction come true? Not a freaking chance. My uncle, who'd lived most of his life under the thumb of family and friends, mediation, regulation, and social filters, was drawn inexorably to one form of media totally lacking in mediation, regulation, and filters, social or otherwise. Much to my dismay, I discovered that there was no way in hell Uncle Julius was walking away when he finally had an audience who wanted to hear everything he said. No matter how outrageous it originally sounded, when he lobbed the idea onto the table like a conversational grenade during a family dinner. He got so caught up in the whole podcast process that after only three truly scintillating episodes of Telekinetic Tales from the Hanoi Hilton, he brought his own intro music to spice up my humble little narrowcast. Starting that day, TT from the HH always opened with a portion of the Jimi Hendrix solo in Gypsy Sun and Rainbow's 1969 rendition of the Star Spangled Banner. Brilliant music, and indicative of his taste in music. Then, holy crap of craps, once he found out that he could actually subscribe to the podcast and download the whole thing to an MP3 player so he could listen to it all again and again, he nagged and nagged my mother until she finally drove him into town to get an iPod. He would have asked me to drive him, but Mum was the custodian of his finances, so he pretty much had to have her along to pay for it anyway, so why not have her do the driving, too? Uncle Julius was actually the first member of his geriatric generation in town to get an iPod. And after only an hour of showing it off to the Thursday morning Folgers and Glenfiddich crowd down at Legion No. 1, the local Circuit City was inundated with Walker-supported, curse-muttering, half-informed senior citizen veterans joining the 21st century with one of them there iPod music people thingies. When Circuit City ran out of stock, the Crestline minibus from the Eleanor Roosevelt Retirement Palace was quickly commandeered for an impromptu road trip to Walmart's electronics department. There was even a little side trip to the in-store McDonald's, wedged between the portrait studio and the crafts department, because nothing says, I'm on the cutting edge of technology, like fumbling with a too damn small to read instruction manual over a regular Freedom Fries and a deep fried fillet of fish sandwich that sticks to your dentures. All was goofy, but pretty quiet on the podcast front for a while, when all of a sudden, one cloudy afternoon, Uncle Julius made the seemingly harmless offer to actually channel some of his psychic energy through the podcast, to share his gift, as it were, with the masses. Oh, it didn't matter that I explained fairly patiently to him that the show wasn't live, that it was all pre-recorded and then uploaded. He wanted what he wanted, and why on earth would his favorite nephew deny him that bit of joy? So I didn't. I suppose part of the reason I went along with the idea was that Julius had laid claim to special powers for as long as I had known him, and I figured at worst it would make an interesting episode for his growing fanhood. At best, he would actually succeed and make us both famous. My memory's a bit spotty when it comes to any of my childhood before the age of 5, but since I was one of those kids always hitting my head on things when trying a stupid stunt while my big brother Lucas egged me on, I'm hardly surprised. That said, my first memory of Uncle Julius's strange and wonderful gift was when he used it to stop me from running away from home on my brother's bike. It was my 5th summer, and I was one pissed off little brat. I went tearing past him, down the old lane out back of the barn, with my school bag stuffed with my G.I. Joe, my entire Hot Wheels collection, fresh underwear, and a half-crushed bag of Hostess salt and vinegar potato chips bouncing on my back. The fact that I wasn't stopping to pick up the Hot Wheels as they tumbled out of the incompletely closed bag and into the dusty lane told my uncle that something was seriously wrong. My Hot Wheels were my life. He shouted four or five times at me to hold up, and he even made an attempt to chase me on foot. But I was pedaling like all four of our school bullies were on my tail, and stopping meant being beaten to death. The stupid thing is that I was only running away because Mom wouldn't let me eat a third post-school pre-chore chocolate chip cookie, having already consumed my standard issue allotment of two. Like I said, I was a brat. The way my brother, the ever-reliable prosecution's witness against me, tells the story, Uncle Julius stopped shouting, dropped to one knee, put his hands to his temples, and fixed his stare of power at the fleeing bike. Lucas said that our uncle simply willed the bike to stop, and it did, dead in its tracks. I, on the other hand, flew more than a little awkwardly over the handlebars and landed on my unhelmeted head. Come to think of it, that was probably the first of many such minor head traumas to come. When my senses finally cleared, I swore up and down that my tumble was caused by the front tire slamming into a fist-sized rock lying in wait in the lane. But since the rock was nowhere to be seen afterwards, Lucas insisted it was Julius. All these years later, I've come to suspect that I probably hit the damn rock hard enough to knock it over into the weeds. But good old Uncle Julius claimed that it was his psychic powers that had stopped me, and who was I to argue? I was only a cookie-deprived 5-year-old fugitive escaping the drudgery of helping Mom hang out the wash to dry. That's my first memory of the strange and wonderful world of Uncle Julius and his powers. Unable to work due to the pain and limited movement of a shrapnel-punctured left shoulder from a second tour in Nam, my uncle had all the time in the world to dedicate to strengthening his mental powers. From that day on, Julius spent 144 minutes exactly each day working to refine his gift. He said that 144 was a number of power. He'd read it somewhere, probably on the back of one of the comics books he used to love to pore over while sitting in the barber's chair every third Tuesday. And he accepted the fact without question. So it was 144 minutes each day, day in and day out, without fail, pretty much for the rest of his life. I have no idea why he couldn't apply that kind of dedication to the simple things in life, like learning to play the guitar we bought him for Christmas in '88, or changing his dirty socks before the rank smell chased the dog and every other living thing off the front porch after dinner. It had to be 144 minutes each day of working on his psychic power. This working to refine his power took a number of forms over time. In the first 2 years, all he really did was a daily drill of sitting in front of the old, overheated, static-spouting GE radio he kept out in the barn. He would stare and stare and concentrate on adjusting the volume with only the powers of his mind. This was back in the days before cable television took away humanity's imagination, and from what I remember of that damned radio, when it actually occasionally picked up a broadcast, the volume was known to vary all on its lonesome, with or without Uncle Julius's mental intervention. Then the GE blew a tube and nearly burned down the barn. Mom was a whole lot less than impressed and said her brother-in-law was putting crazy ideas into her young son's head, so it had to stop. Julius took that as the challenge it was not meant to be, and since he was satisfied that he had some measure of control over his powers, he graduated himself to tougher tasks. One Saturday in my 7th summer, he finally made the leap in faith to try influencing a living creature. Bicycles and radios were one thing, but God's creatures would really test his power, he whispered when I slipped up beside him and out in the yard. Uncle Julius was up at sunrise that day, and he'd spent the first 2 hours staring at the swallows swooping and diving from their nests in the barn to the fallow field and back. When I noticed his focus, I asked, in all childhood innocence, if stopping a flying bird would make it drop like a stone to the ground, where it could be hurt or worse. Well, that ended the experiment with the swallows pretty damn quickly. Julius wasn't a cruel man. Sometimes he just needed someone to point out the flaw in his single-minded methodology. He thanked me for the insight and assured me that, if they could, the birds would thank me too. Then he took my kid-dirty 7-year-old hand in his soft, dry, oversized paw, led me around to the side of the house where Mom had her vegetable garden. "Lad, there's a rabbit hereabouts who's been eating your mother's carrots and tomatoes. She wants me to set up a snare to kill him, but I think I have a better way. And it starts with becoming invisible." By invisible, Julius meant the very mundane method of using a blind, like Dad did when he went duck hunting every fall. But this kid was still excited to be included in such serious adult goings-on, so off we went to find the materials necessary to becoming invisible. We eventually built our blind out of some of Mum's lesser bed sheets and planted ourselves in the wicker chairs carried over from the porch so we could watch through the spaces between the sheets in comfort. I really didn't expect to see the rabbit because I'd seen him out there earlier getting his fill while Uncle Julius was staring at the swallows. Mum said I was to throw rocks at the rabbit if I ever saw it, but it wasn't growing carrots and it didn't make me eat carrots. Matter of fact, it ate the carrots I hated so much that in my books made little Bunny Fufu my friend, and I don't throw rocks at friends. Sorry. Now, Uncle Julius may have had some strange ideas over the years, but except for that last week's freight train incident, he had the most incredible luck of anyone I've ever met. If a flipped coin landed heads 5 out of 10 times for me, for Julius, it would land heads 8 out of 10. At the time, like him, I believed it was his powers, but when Fufu the rabbit hopped out of the bushes only 5 minutes into our little vigil, even my uncle said, "Well, ain't that lucky?" Then he leaned in, raised his hands, palms forward, one eye closed, and stared kind of lopsided at the bunny. And this 7-year-old blood kin, who hoped to have some of the power rub off, leaned forward, raised my hands, closed one eye, and lopsidedly stared too. In my experience, rabbits, when not being chased, are cautious little critters. And even at 7, I knew that. To this day, I've never seen one hop more than a couple feet without stopping to listen and sniff. And that little carrot eater we watched way back then didn't disappoint me. He took 2 hops and froze. After a second or two, he moved again, only to stop again after 2 more hops. It was typical cottontail behavior. But the barefooted 7-year-old in dungarees and his 30-ish uncle in his dusty camo combat pants, drab olive t-shirt, floppy U.S. Army-issue jungle hat, swore that every stop that rabbit made was caused by nothing less than the powers held in our brains. I started that simple vigil just wanting to keep my offbeat uncle company on a sunny Saturday, but I finished it a firm believer in the extraordinary powers of certain human minds. I became a true convert that day, and as is typical in rural communities, word spread faster than a ticked-off bumblebee. Pretty soon, some of the more superstitious farmers came by to ask if the psychic, if he could heal or predict. Well, if he couldn't before, Julius certainly found that he could now. Never as popular a man as my hard-working father, his brother, Julius now had visitors on a regular basis, and he loved it. They came to him for bunions, breaks, sprains, gout, and one daring old gent brought his piles. But Julius was wise enough to refer him to the herbalist down the road. Let me point out something before I go on. Julius Flack may have been a shell-shocked, gullible enough to believe himself a psychic, but he was a thinking man. As my mother never failed to point out, Julius always had an answer for everything. "Why don't you make it rain and save the crops, Julius?" a neighbor asked. "And if I make it rain now, Bill, we'll have a colder winter due to the variation in pressure caused by the unexpected cloud cover and the new level of humidity during this new moon. Why can't you make my leg heal faster, Mr. Flack?" "Well, if it heals too quickly, Mitchell, the break will take calcites from the rest of the bone and weaken it, and then your limp will be worse than before." "Julius, if you can make a hoppy rabbit stand still, why not make my chickens lay twice as many eggs?" "Chickens only got so many eggs in them, Mr. Wilkins, and if you force them to give them to you all at once, it'll kill them. And then all you have is one good roast, a handful of feathers, a bunch of eggs, and an empty spot in your coop." Even my brothers thought it'd be a good idea to seek the advice of his uncle, the sage wise man. "Uncle Julius, can you use your powers to make the girls at school like me?" "Lucas, lad, I'm a psychic, not a miracle worker." He didn't always make sense, but he did have a sense of humor. If he got a dilly of a question, though, he'd simply counter it with, "Well, that's more a question for the good Lord in church on Sunday." And that shut up the lot of them. They were willing to believe a psychic healer walked among them, but they were also good Episcopalians, and some questions threatened to lead them onto sacrilegious ground where the devil sows his wicked ideas. It may not sound like it, but every once in a while, Julius had a flash of common sense, and it was usually while he was at his healing. While he was concentrating his power on a back injury, he would knead the muscle with his hands. He said it was to help the transfer of power, but I know now that a good circulation-aiding muscle rub has been known to do wonders for an injury. Another time, I sprained my left ankle while playing with Dad's snowshoes, and Julius applied his power while my foot was propped up in a snowbank. Whether I now credit the snow's cold or my uncle's powers, the swelling did go down with uncanny speed. Did Julius notice any of the coincidences? He never said, one way or another. And Dad? Well, Julius was his little brother, and it never did hurt business to have a healer in the family. Someone who drove from two counties away to see that same healer could quite often be convinced to take home a bushel of fresh corn or apples for a small price. Then, as I said, one day my somewhat mixed up but harmless telepathetic uncle, as Lucas used to call him at school, to keep from being pummeled when the others mocked Julius behind his back, offered to share his healing power with the subscribers of my podcast and took his game to a whole new level. Before we knew it, what seemed like half the world was coming along for the ride. I guess people will believe just about anything, if it'll make them feel special and less alone in a continually disconnected and lonely world. So them wanting to develop their psychic abilities through a pre-recorded podcast shouldn't have surprised me as much as it did. In two blinks of an eye, Uncle Julius went from being a self-proclaimed psychic war vet trying to predict the upcoming seasons better than the Farmer's Almanac to being the talk of the internet, the prince of the podosphere, and the lord of every general store, front porch, and Walmart checkout line in the great state of Kansas and well beyond. And then he went and got himself hit by a train. Being hit by a train has an effect on a person's reputation, psychic or not, and before I set about putting together a podcast tribute for the man almost triple the age of your average pod monkey, I better tell you about the end. 2 weeks ago, Julius returned from one of his forays into the city, walking on a cloud of sheer enthusiastic joy. It was the 8th, a fact I remember because it was Lucas's son's 18th birthday, and we were all getting ready for the party. Mom, ever the practical one, asked her brother-in-law if he'd found a job. He was 72, but she never gave up hope. A job? Nope. A calling? Yes, ma'am. And that's all he said until dinner, when the whole family was gathered around the table while young Lucas Jr. blew out the candles and talked about his first year of college. I myself was flashing back to my childhood, making a mountain and lake out of my mashed potatoes and gravy, and almost everyone else was eating as much of Mom's incredible home-cooked feasts as they could. Mom still cooked as though for sons that were growing, even though we're now well into our 40s, and these family events were a welcomed chance to purge the fast food crap that was clogging up our intestines and top up on free-range, organic, Mom's good cooking. As a matter of fact, Lucas Sr. did happen to grow up to be a giant of a man, a full head taller than my own, 5'9", and I swear it was because of Mom's cooking. Since he'd happily taken over the farm when Dad retired in 99, I guess it was a good thing that he was the size of a reliable Clydesdale. But back to my uncle. Julius told the story all at once, in an uncharacteristic blurt. I stopped a streetcar today. He came to a complete stop. They tried to say it was a power surge on the 3rd Street line, but they just can't admit the truth. It was me. Mom stayed quiet. Dad looked up and made some weak non-committal agreement. My sister-in-law Lisa just nodded, her pretty little mouth full of fresh biscuit, and my brother paid no attention whatsoever, intent as he was on his roast beast. Only Lucas Jr. and I showed any real enthusiasm, and it was me that didn't get the brain into gear before releasing the park brake on my mouth again. A streetcar, Uncle Julius? Well, that's better than a rabbit or a bike by far. Next thing you know, you'll be stopping a freight train. Shit, I'd said it. I couldn't take it back even if I'd known what idea I'd just put into the head of my well-meaning fool of an uncle. 20/20 hindsight isn't much of a gift, people. A freight train! He just locked his gaze on the centerpiece candle for a moment, and his smile grew from a single seed to a whole crop and a handful of blinks. This time no one but me noticed, most of them having found that hot sweet potatoes are infinitely more interesting than yet another story from Uncle Julius. Needless to say, my own family weren't subscribers of my podcast. They hadn't heard a word he'd said over the months. For weeks, things went on as usual with a new podcast recorded and uploaded, with folks still dropping by to visit Uncle Julius, ask for his help, and maybe even buy some corn or a handful or two of carrots from Mum's smaller-than-it-used-to-be vegetable garden. It took a day or two, but once the trickle of fan responses to the podcast started, it became a flash flood too fast for me to do a damn thing. If it wasn't bad enough that I gave the freight train idea to Julius in the first place, I'm sure I compounded the whole thing when I didn't stop him from expounding on the podcast about the whole streetcar incident and what was next for the telekinetic power of Julius Flack. The fans were ecstatic and supportive, and everything Julius's own family has never been of any of his wacky ideas. But as well-meaning as they were, they didn't know my uncle like I did, and I'm pretty sure none of them imagined that he would take it so far that he might get hurt. Then again, there were probably more than a few who'd hoped we'd videotape the event and post the results on the web, however gruesome they might be. Maybe if there'd been some reg or rule forbidding old men from trying to send psychic powers to his legion of podcast subscribers, then maybe I wouldn't be planning a memorial cast. Maybe Julius would have become bored and tried roadkill taxidermy or rock tumbling or macrame. But there wasn't, and he didn't. Two nights later, on Tuesday, the moon was right, full, and the night felt thick with energy. It just might be that's what inspired Julius to follow through with his plan, because he sat on the porch until 2 a.m., leaning forward, arms up, palms forward, and one eye closed, staring at the moon's full disk, as if he could soak up all its mystical powers to augment his own. Maybe my uncle really did stop that rickety old streetcar, and maybe after practice, a lot of practice, a small empty freight train could have been within his reach. But at 11:55 Wednesday morning, the fully laden three-engine Wichita-bound Kansas Central ran over the kindest soul to ever come back mixed up from a war that never should have been. They said his end was quick, but I wonder if he even saw it coming, what with his hands up in front of him and his one good eye closed as he focused his power on the not-so-simple task at hand. That's it for the Tao of Tim this week, brothers and sisters. Peace be with you.